tears on my pillow that won't dry on their own. Beyond my years, I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step,
day by day,
day by day, I'm on the road to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Step Series. Okay, Ryan's going to tell us our joke.
Why should you never allow a newcomer on the show Jeopardy? Because they always have all the answers, never ask any questions.
I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Catherine. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our 2-minute meditation. So please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise that might or will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready? Okay, enjoy your time with God. From the Big Book, page 17, the tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news that this book carries. to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Casey to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of this 12 steps is to have one. So it's kind of important to know what one is.
I'm Casey. I'm an alcoholic. This is Spiritual Experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring out recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described, though it was not our intention to create such an impression. Many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by the vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline, with few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most empathetically, we wish to say that an alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one needs to have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all argument, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane meeting mode or just turn them off. So tonight we have Pat R. He's coming back with us to talk about step two. Welcome, Pat.
I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Pat. And thanks to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the program of AA, I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And for that, I will be forever grateful. AA didn't just give me my life back, but it gave me one worth living. And I just love AA. I love the fellowship. I love meetings. I love everything about this place. I was usually before I talk, my brain is just scrambled. I have, one of my biggest fear is to get up here and not start, not know where to start. And what I learned, but what you find out about me is once I start, I can't shut up. But my biggest fear is to just blank, you know, and so I always kind of have a place to start. And, you know, all I could think about on the way over here was Bill Wilson talking to Bill Dodson's wife, Henrietta Dodson, and making a statement that the Lord has been so kind to me, relieving me of this terrible disease that I just can't stop talking about it and tell other people, you know, and I feel like that. I mean, all I ever want to talk about is recovery and AA and CA and, you know, any other fellowships that I'm involved in. I just love talking about it. I love talking to other people about it. You know, and I said, like I said last week, I chase this thing. I chase speakers around. I chase this fellowship around. You know, when I decide what meeting I'm going to, I want to know who's speaking there. I want to know what people are going to be there. You know, I want like-minded people there. And, you know, if it's not the speaker that I want to hear, well, who else is going to? Is Billy going to be there? You know, is Bob going to be there? You know, and I want to be around people that chase this thing also. And so I really, I can't say enough how much this fellowship has done for me and how grateful I am to Alcoholics Anonymous. But that wasn't always the case. I didn't always want to be here, like a lot of you, you know. I'm sure half the people in the room here are here because they have to be here. And I get that, you know. I get having to be here. And I get the people that really believe that they're blessed to be here, you know, because I've sat in both seats. You know, I didn't come here because I got up one morning and thought it was a good idea. You know, I didn't come. Well, the wife's gone. The house is gone. You know, I got a lawsuit against me. I have a restraining order. Shit, I think I'll go to AA today. You know, that just isn't how it happened, you know. I ended up here because I had nowhere else to go, you know, and I really believe it was, you know, I always talk about it as being a moment of clarity. I think it was a moment of God's grace that just fell on me. Because up until that night, at the Days Inn at Commercial Boulevard and 441, which is now a La Quinta, I go by it all the time. You know, 3 weeks into a run in that hotel room, a thought comes to me that I need help. That thought had never come to me before. I had never thought about coming to AA. I didn't care about AA. I knew my sister was in AA. It was just never an option. You know, nobody ever said you should go to AA. I mean, I heard you're an asshole a lot, you know, but, you know, who drinks a lot, you know, but nobody ever said that. And out of nowhere, I get this thought that says, call your sister, you need help. And I end up in these rooms. And I knew immediately that I needed to be here. And I knew I belonged. When I started hearing your guys' stories and hearing you guys sharing, I knew I needed to be here. I did not want to be here. I didn't want to be here for a while. You know, this was not what I thought my life was going to be. I had written this in high school that when I grow up, I want to be the guest speaker in an AA meeting. That wasn't on my to-do list, you know. And I've said it before, my mom can't even brag about this shit, you know. You know, my son speaks in AA, you know. My son spoke at the International CA Convention, you know. People grab their purses when she says that, you know. I would have much rather been a member of another fellowship, you know. And so, you know, coming into AA and starting a new way of life and admitting that I was defeated was not something that I wanted to do, you know. And I didn't even know what that meant. I didn't know what to surrender. You know, when people ask me, "Are you ready to surrender?" I said, "No." You know, I don't. What do you mean? You know, I got to get my stuff back. You know, I got to get the house back. I got to get the ex back. You know, I got to get this lawsuit taken care of. This surrender thing. You know. But you know, when somebody asked me if I wanted to start a new way of life, I jumped up out of my chair and grabbed a white chip, and it was the only white chip I've ever picked up. March 26, 1991. And I started my journey in this fellowship, and look, this, you know, I learned the good news, bad news right away, you know, and the good news is that you don't have to believe in anything. You know, we're going to talk about the second step here. The good news is you don't have to believe in anything. There is no second requirement to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's one requirement, that's a desire to stop drinking. There is no second requirement. The bad news is this is all about finding God that's going to solve your problem. And that means that we have to admit defeat. You know, we have to admit that I can't do anything about it. You know, and that's a tough spot to be in for somebody like me who's been self-sufficient all my life. But it was obvious, sitting here and hearing your stories and being in the situation that I was in, there was nothing I could do about my drinking. And we talk about no requirement for membership in AA, but there's some requirements to recover in AA, you know, and we don't call them requirements, we call them suggestions, you know. But it's kind of a suggestion, like you should wear a parachute when you jump out of a plane. You know, it's that kind of a suggestion. That if you want to recover here, then there's we have one solution in Alcoholics Anonymous. And our solution is a power greater than yourself. You know, a God of your own understanding, which to me was the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous, the absolute miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. To me, the biggest miracle of AA is Ebby Thatcher sitting across the table with Bill Wilson, and out of frustration. I love hearing Bill tell the story, because Bill tells the story, the more Ebby preached, the drunker I got, you know. And Bill's having this philosophical argument with Ebby, and Ebby's getting pissed. And Ebby finally throws up his hands and says, "Well, damn it, Bill, believe in whatever the hell you want to believe in. Choose your own God." And he shut Bill up. And to me, that was the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous, that Bill was able to believe in his own conception of God, that he didn't have to believe in somebody else, because Bill was raised anti-religious by his grandfather. He didn't want to hear that religious crap. You know, but when Ebby put it that way, "Why don't you choose your own conception of God?" And by the way, he doesn't say create. Right, we all, a lot of times we say create. He doesn't say create. We don't get to create God, right? We get to choose our own conception of God, and there's a lot of things to choose from. And Bill gives us a ton of them: spirit of the universe, you know, creative intelligence. You know, you can go on and on and on with all the suggestions. You know what's amazing about that statement that Ebby makes there, or that history, that part of our history that takes place in Bill's kitchen. Is recently, and look, history is always evolving. What I think is true one day isn't true the next, you know. And I, you know, it's based on new information. You know, we get new information and we incorporate it and we filter it and we maybe discard an old truth for a new truth. And this second step is all about that, right? And recently we found out that almost didn't go in the big book. That meeting in the kitchen where Bill has his awakening, kind of, right? Not his experience, but his awakening in that kitchen goes into the big book 2 weeks before it's published. It's a piece of history that I just learned. I shared it with Mike recently, that Bill's story doesn't start off with war fever. It starts off with his story. It starts off, "I grew up in a small town in East Dorset, raised by my grandpa. My parents split up. I was raised by my grandpa." It starts like all of our stories, where I was born and where I grew up. But it gets edited before it goes into the big book, and Hank was probably responsible for it. And what happens is, anybody who's been around a while know that our stories change from when we start telling our story when we get here to when we have some recovery behind us, right? So Bill wasn't talking about that meeting with Ebby Thatcher early in his talks. He was talking about his war stories. He was talking about what happened. And later, as he starts to evolve in his talks, that goes into the story. Well, Hank Parkhurst got drunk and got kicked out of his house, and he's living with Bill at the time. And by the way, if it wasn't for Hank Parkhurst, there is no big book. You know, it wasn't for Bill, nobody writes it. But if it isn't for Hank Parkhurst, it doesn't get published. And Hank is living with Bill at the time because his wife kicked him out. And he's following Bill around hearing his story. And he hears Bill start to tell that story. And Hank inserts that into Bill's story. Seconds and inches, right? That are the difference between whether we're here or we're not. Right? Because me, I think that's the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Nobody's telling you how to believe or what to believe. And we're just asking you to be willing to believe. What does it take to get there? You know, it takes an insurmountable obstacle. You know, as when Bill has his spiritual experience in Towns Hospital, one of the books that Ebby brings him is Variety of Religious Experiences, which we quote at the spiritual appendix at the beginning of this. And Bill, in detox, is reading Varieties of Religious Experiences by William James. Right? And William James talks about the requirements for a spiritual experience. One of them is to be facing defeat. You have to be facing defeat. You have to be facing an insurmountable obstacle to want to choose a way of life that you have no interest in. I mean, I don't think any of us aspired to be an Alcoholics Anonymous. Something, some tragedy. Our recovery is usually grounded in chaos and tragedy of some sort. Mine was. The bottom, they call it, right? The bottom. The bitter morass of self-pity, whatever. Whether it's emotional or financial or relational, usually it's the relational and the financial that leads to the emotional. You know, however you get to that place where you admit defeat, where you'll do anything. I'll do anything. Admitting defeat, facing defeat. The second requirement is to admit that. I mean, we all face it. All of us, none of us get here on virtue. All of us land here. And there's a moment where we know we're facing defeat, but admitting it is another story. And those, he says, are the two requirements for a spiritual experience. The third element is that we believe that only a power greater than ourselves can solve that issue, can solve that problem. So, although there's no requirement for membership, there's absolutely some requirements for a spiritual experience. Yeah. And I was thinking on the way, how did I get here? How did I get from, I'm an agnostic when I get here. I'm a practicing agnostic when I get here. Well, Bill says half of us are atheists and agnostics. How does a practicing agnostic, because I'm not denying it just in case. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to ever say, there's absolutely no God, because if I get there and there is, I'm screwed, you know? So I would never say I'm an atheist, just in case he is listening, you know. But I surely was an agnostic. I have no knowledge whatsoever of God or no desire to follow any principles that God might be attached to, you know. So how does somebody like me that comes in here like that end up where I'm here, where I can't stop talking about God? Where I can't stop talking about what God has done in my life, or how God has affected my life, or how God has taken me from a hopeless drunk to an active participant in society, and all I want to do is talk about what God has done in my life. So how do you get there? You know, and it starts right here. It starts with a willingness, just a willingness to change, a willingness to believe. And to me, that's the absolute miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was probably the biggest battle in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous was and Bill talks about that in his grapevine articles in Language of the Heart, which is really AA history. You know, when he talks about that, he thought one of the biggest miracles in Alcoholics Anonymous was to get the liberals of New York and the conservatives of the Midwest to agree on a God of your conception. You know, how could they ever come to terms with that? Because New York is, you know, Hank Parkhurst and Jim Burwell are atheists that want no God. And when you take all that God out of there, you're going to scare the newcomer out with God. Right? And Bob and Clarence are out in Cleveland saying, more God, more God. We need more God, you know. And a Dr. Howard, a psychiatrist friend of the program, mediates that battle and brings them to center. Our lives held in the balance, I think. You know, because if you tell me before I get here, this is all about God, I'm not sure I land here. I'm not sure. You know, I don't know. But you told me I didn't have to believe in anything. You know, just come, just show up, you know, and then surrender. You know what? I just thought about a joke, right? So this Irishman is looking for a parking place. And it's storming rain, and he says, please, God, if you get me this parking place, I'll never drink another drop of booze the rest of my life. And just then, the clouds part, a beam of sunlight comes through the clouds and shines right on a parking place right up front. He says, never mind, God, I found one. You know? That's where I'm at when I get here. That's where I'm at, right? Right? I'll go to any length. I'll do anything you tell me to do. Okay, I got a step workshop that we do on Saturday nights that you need to be at Saturday night. That's kind of inconvenient. You got anything on, like, on a Tuesday? I'm kind of available on Tuesday night. And look, I hear this all. People who sponsor a lot of people, they hear this all the time. They hear it all the time. That's damn inconvenient, you know? You're dying from a hopeless state of mind and body, and that's freaking inconvenient. I'm the wrong guy for you. You know, I'm just the wrong guy. You know, and look, I just heard this the other day. I mean, it's something that happens all the time. You know, I'll do anything. You know, I just need a job. I'll do any. All I got to make is $150 a week. You know, that's all my rent is at the fraction house. You know, I just. You know, if I could just make $150 a week, I'd be thrilled. I'd be happy. They get a job 3 days later. F this shit, you know? I'm underpaid. They don't know what the hell they're doing. I should be running this place, you know? I'm out of here, man. I'm slave labor shit, you know? I deal with it all the time. I really do. You know, I really sometimes wonder how I stay so up, you know? I mean, because you're surrounded by freaking failure most of the time, right? True, right? I mean, if you sponsor a lot of people, for the most part, you're surrounded by failure, you know? Inability to just do what it takes. To, you know, not even the inability, the unwillingness. The unwillingness to go to any length. Isn't it bad enough? You know? Admitting defeat. Man, that's a key here to the second step. I mean, that's the key. You know? I'll do anything. That's what you hear from all of them when they get here. I'll do anything. Except that. Get that. Five meetings in a row? Five meetings? Really? That's excessive. You know? I wasn't that guy. I wasn't. I got the fact that I couldn't stay stopped on my own. The book goes to a great length to give us that, to get us to that point, to convince us that the problem centers in the mind, not the body, right? I get it. When I drink to excess. I get the physical allergy. So knowing that allergy manifests itself in a physical craving for more, knowing that every time I drink, and my history proves that out, 20 years of drinking proves out that I cannot drink without getting drunk. I cannot control my drinking. That was obvious to everybody around me that saw me drink, right? So why can't I stay stopped? Because based on that knowledge, based on that physical knowledge, I should stay stopped. I should just not drink. Based on consequences. I love asking this question. How many have given up relationships rather than quitting drinking? Right? Let me see a show of hands. Anybody go to jail instead of quit drinking? Right? Knowing they were going to test, right? Knowing that they were going to drop you, you picked up a drink anyway. That's the inability to stay stopped. Given sufficient reason, and we pick up anyway. Divorce. Lose the relationship. Lose a career. Lose jobs. Trade your freedom. And somehow we justify it. You know what I used to say, and this is the best I could come up with. I had two answers, two pat answers. One was, well, you're not my boss. Right? You think you're my mother? You know? I'm a grown-ass man. Nobody tells me what to do, right? Click, handcuffs, and I'm off, you know. My other one, my best answer, this is what all that I've done in my life, you know, I think myself a pretty smart guy, right? How could you? I don't know. That was it. That's all I had. I don't know. How could you not come home on Christmas Eve? I don't know. I meant to. I was on my way. What the hell is going on in the mind of an addict or an alcoholic that facing jail or divorce, I lost custody of my son. I had custody of my son in my first divorce. Lost it. What makes somebody trade those kind of things to drink? There's something else going on. There's something else going on there. There's something internal going on there. You know, I love the doctor. You know, restless, irritable, and discontent. That labels it. Something emotional. I'm an emotional freaking cripple. I just don't do life without medication. I need a power as great as that medication. That's what I need. Call it what you want. But I need some kind of transformation that is going to replace the alcohol and the drugs because I can't live without it. I'm the guy going to Disney World who's pissed off. I'm worried on my way to Disney World. There's not going to be any freaking parking, you know. Why are we even going? You know, there's going to be long lines. It's going to be hot. You know, we get there. There's 20,000 people having the time of their life, and I'm sitting there like, shit, you know. Freaking hot out. Lines are long. I knew it, you know. Am I the only one, right? But you give me some medication, and I could deal with. Give me. I don't care what direction either. I mean, you know, down, and I'll let you in front of me. You know, it don't matter. You know, take me up. I'll do all three parks in one day. You know. Well, now there's four parks. There was only three when I was going there. No matter. I just don't do well. I'm a worrier when I'm sober. You know, I'm just like, I'm emotionally crippled when I'm sober. And that didn't change when I got here. That didn't change. When I got here, it got worse. You took my medication. Right? How you doing? Fine. Fuck off. You know, I don't even know you. Don't try to hug me, you know. Man, I'm sick of this, you know. Hug Charlie. You get people like hugging me all the time. What the hell was that? What was up with that, you know? A little handshake, you know. Introduce yourself. Get to know me before you hug me, for God's sake. Fought it, man. I fought it. You're telling me that God's the solution. That's the bad news. And we don't hide that. We don't hide that. We're not worried about scaring somebody out of here. If you got a better way, have at it, man. Go for it. We don't hide that. I mean, chapter 7, working with others, stress the spiritual feature freely. Just let them know that they can choose their own conception of God. The miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous, if you ask me. Upon that foundation, a spiritual structure can be built. We grow from there. We just have to start somewhere. The 12 and 12 opens it up even further. It says, look, if you use the group, G-O-D, the group of drunks, they're a power greater than yourself. At the moment, they are. And the book talks about that. The book talks about two powers in chapter 2. It talks on the first page about the power of the fellowship. And there's a great power in this fellowship. And I was one of those guys that used to diss the power of the fellowship, and I'm not anymore. I've been around a little while, and I get there is an amazing and immense power in this fellowship. I've been around a while, and I'll tell you, I've had some time behind me, and I've gone through some what I considered crises in sobriety, tragedies in sobriety in my mind. And if it wasn't for you guys, I wouldn't be here. And that's just fact. You guys held me up when I was falling. You know, and it was a lot of my sponsees that are responsible for me being here right now. Because I wanted to go home and hide under the covers, and they wouldn't let me leave the damn room. You know, they just want to talk, you know. Can we just talk for a minute? Yeah, you know. I want to go home and just wallow in my shit, you know. And they want to talk and get me out of that, you know. And I'm telling you, the guys that I sponsored and the guys that I hung out with, the guys that I chased from meeting to meeting, knew I was going through something, and they showed up. You know, and they'd pick me up and drag my ass to meetings that I didn't want to go to. You know, and this fellowship is powerful, but permanent sobriety is not attainable based on just the fellowship. You can't stay there. It won't. No human power will keep me from picking up a drink or a drug. I must find a power greater than human power. This book says it over and over again. There's not a lot of ideas in here. There's just a few ideas repeated over and over and over again. You know, so how do I find that? You know, and that what's the book say? That's exactly what this book is about, is to answer that question specifically. So how? What did you do? You know, that's what we hope the sponsor asks, right? So what did you do? You know, we swap stories. The miracle, the power that we have is our stories. You know, and as soon as they say, "Hey, I did that. Yeah, I felt like that. Yeah, that happened to me." What did you do? You know, well, I sought a power greater than myself. You know. That's our solution here, you know. The great fact is just this and nothing less that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences that have revolutionized our lives and our attitudes, right? The central fact of my life today is God has entered my heart in a way which is indeed miraculous and commencing to do for me what I couldn't do for myself. And what was that? I couldn't freaking stay stopped. That's what I couldn't do. I couldn't stay stopped. So something's got to change up here. Something's got to change my emotions. And that's a problem. We'll talk a lot about that next week if I ever get through two. But, you know, it's my mind, my thoughts turn to emotions. That's a problem. Because my emotions are based on what you just did or said. You know, that's a problem. Because I don't do good with emotions. I'm an emotional cripple. I don't do well with emotions. So something's got to change up here. Something's got to change emotionally. So how do you get from being an agnostic to that? You know, I'm that kid that was growing up in the Catholic school, man. I grew up And here's the message I heard. And by the way, you know, I'm not bashing the Catholics. I've turned back to the church later in my sobriety. You know, but when I was going, this is what I heard. If you jump through the hoop, God loves you. And if you don't, you go to the fire. You know, now there was also this halfway house called purgatory, right? If you weren't bad enough for the fire or good enough for the gates, you went to halfway, right? I remember something about this certain prayer you would say. I can't remember what the prayer is, that you'd get shot up if somebody said the prayer, you know? And that's what I, by the way, I just heard recently that there is no more purgatory, that they got rid of purgatory. A new truth. Everything evolves, right? Everything changes, right? So when I was, I was a kid, I lied in confession, you know, because I didn't want to be a bad kid, you know. So I went to confession. I made shit up, you know. I would poll the people around me, like, how many lies you got, you know. Did you steal anything? No, okay, you know. And I would like, I wanted to be normal. I just wanted to be average. I didn't want to be the bad kid or the great kid. I just wanted to be in the middle. So I would go in there and just make up something, you know. And I was probably the only Catholic kid that left confession with guilt, you know. Just lied to the damn priest, you know. So I'm not doing well making it to the gates, even at a young age. And now you hit puberty and then all bets are off, you know. Not only am I going to hell, but I'm going to be blind, you know. That was just the deal, you know. I swore I'd quit when I got glasses, but... So what happens when you know you can't live up to those principles? It's important. Now, by the way, I didn't know nobody could. I thought I was the only one falling short, you know. I didn't know that everybody fell short. I didn't know the people that wrote the bigger book, they fell short. Matter of fact, Paul is probably one of my favorite characters in all of history. You know, I mean, he could have been one of us. I mean, but probably the most broken person on the planet and wrote most of the bigger book. You know, I mean, that was my man. You know, what I should do, I do not, and what I should not do, I do. That's Paul, you know. Yeah, but Paul's successful living comes from daily dying, you know. Paul has some great, and I'll quote him a lot during this thing, but there's one of the most broken people on the planet who has an experience. He has an experience. He's on his way to kill Christians and has an experience with God. And spends most of his life in prison writing the bigger book and never recants that experience. Never recants that experience. You know, so, I mean, Paul's one of my favorite guys. So I get to a point where there's too much pleasure in what I'm doing, so some agnosticism has to come in here. I just have to start denying the existence, right? If you can't live up to the principles, what do? Well, you lower yours, you know? Well, you lower them until they're just gone. Right? And so that's what we do. You know, I can't live up to principles, lower them. You know, I can't live up to my goals, lower them. You know, I wanted to be an engineer, not going to happen. All right, carpenter, you know. You know? Carpenter ain't going to happen either. All right, laborer, you know. You just lower. That's what we do. I mean, and what happens is they start lowering pretty quick, you know, and you end up out of work. Yeah. So I can't live up to it. I'm denying it. Now, I'm not going, like I said, I'm not going as far to say there is no God. I'm just saying that. You know, I thought as a kid it was Santa Claus, you know. So we're talking about, for me, we're talking about denying the existence to a point. All right, well, there's something out there, but it's not that picture of that bearded guy that I see all over the place. You know, kind of a Moses-looking guy is kind of how I pictured God. And, you know, I started to think of God as like a Santa Claus, you know. And it was never a relationship. There was never... you know, something that I lived to have contact with. I wasn't even a foxhole prayer. I wasn't even that guy that when I was in trouble prayed to get out of the trouble. I was going to think my way out of all this stuff. You know, it wasn't my thing. You know, so how do I get from that to here? Well, that's what this book's about, is letting you cross that, what does it say, the bridge of reason, right, to the shore of faith. You know, how do we get there? You know, we have to change the way we think. Something has to change on the mind side. And the only thing that brings that about in my mind was total disaster. You know, was total collapse in my life. And I really believe that I hadn't been there, I would have never gone and even sought the spiritual experience. You know. How do you believe in something you can't see? Yeah. How do you believe in something you can't see? Yeah. We believe in stuff we can't see all the time. All the time. Right? Constantly using stuff that I can't see. You know what fascinates me? My remote control. Right? You know, satellite TV just fascinates me, right? That they can point a camera at somebody across the world and shoot that beam to a satellite in outer space, and then shoot that beam from outer space to a satellite dish, and that comes out, like, what is there, a couple second delay on my TV? That's absolutely amazing. You know? But I don't question it. I don't say I'm not using this freaking remote until somebody shows me how that works. You know, I need to see how that works first, right? And that truth, by the way, is always changing. I'll tell you, I think I have more proof here that there is a God in this room than there is such a thing called atoms, right? Because I can show you how many have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body as a result of these steps. See, there's some serious proof right there, right? How many have seen an atom? Yeah. No, I haven't seen one either, but I believe it. I believe it, right? Why? Because somebody said something. You know, a couple German guys, you know, invent a damn microscope, you know? We got this table here, it's solid, it's definitely solid, no doubt about it, it's solid. And then Hans, he develops a microscope, and he says, nope, it ain't solid, there's a bunch of atoms there. Bunch of atoms, and there's space there. There's atoms and space in between the atoms. And that's just the truth. And we go, oh, okay. You know, we don't question it. Yeah, okay, that's true. You know? Then they develop a more powerful microscope, and Hans comes back and says, we were wrong. There's not just atoms. Those atoms are even made up of smaller particles. There's these neutrons and protons with these negatively charged electrons whirling around them in there. And there's all kind of space in there. Oh, damn. Must be true, because they said it's true. You know, right? I mean, it's got to be true. Right? It's like flipping the switch. We don't see electricity going, but we flip the switch. Not any problem. Nobody has to prove that there's electricity going through those lines. But the minute you say, I got a power greater than human power that will save your life, we go, hold on. What's the book say? That perverse streak comes out. Prove it. Prove it. We use stuff all the time that we can't see, and we just take somebody else's word for it. I just showed you proof of a power greater than human power working in people's lives who have come from death to life. You know, there's a bunch of Lazarus living in this room, man. I'm one. You know, death to life. Resembles ourselves, but like our old selves, but little. You know. So how do we get there? We got to buy in. We got to buy in. You know, we got to take the. It's just not sustainable unless we find some kind and put some kind of God in our life. What you know, what fascinates me is the miracles that have brought this program together. You know, we talked about Ebbie Thatcher coming to Bill Wilson with the solution. Well, where did Ebbie get it? You know, Ebbie gets it from a guy named Roland Hazard, right? Well, where does Roland get that information? Roland sees a psychiatrist in Switzerland by mistake, right? Roland's supposed to see Sigmund Freud. If Roland sees Sigmund Freud, we're probably doing cocaine and studying dream therapy, you know? But he doesn't see the greatest psychiatrist on the planet. He falls in with his intern, Carl Jung. Carl Jung's a believer. Right? Carl Jung, over his desk, it says, God is present, invoked or not. How does that happen? How does Roland Hazard land with him? Yeah. And Roland Hazard is told that you need to have what I've called spiritual experience once in a while, here and there. He tells him he's doomed. You're a chronic alcoholic, as most of us. I've never been successful with one like you. I've never been successful with a chronic alcoholic. One of the best psychiatrists in the world. I've never been successful with a chronic alcoholic. Once in a while, though, here and there, I've seen people have these vital spiritual experiences where ideas, emotions, and attitudes that were the guiding force of these men and women were replaced by a whole new set of conceptions, a whole new set of ideas, attitudes, and emotions. Change the way we think, change what we do, change our emotions. Because it's an emotional issue. Yeah, we suffer from an abnormal reaction. We suffer from a physical craving when we pick. And look, I'm not talking to you crackheads. You know, you guys, you're on another plane, man. You know, there's no such thing as recreational crack use, okay? You know, but you drunks and you know, you guys, the other guys, man, you guys, you know, you suffer from this physical reaction. But if you don't put it in you, you don't suffer from it. So you need to find a way to stay stopped. And that means changing the way we think, so we change the way we act, so we change the way we feel, and we don't need to medicate. What a miracle, right? He tells Roland Hazard, says, great, I'll go back to church. He said, ain't enough for you. How's he know that? Well, he's talking to the believer, right? They talked about the believer in our book, right? If a better code of morals or a better philosophy on life worked, we wouldn't be here. He's speaking to the believer. If your religious beliefs and your religious actions and what you do at church was enough, you wouldn't be here. So everything you know is killing you. It's what you don't know that's going to save your life. He's speaking to them. Carl Jung speaks to him as a believer. Roland Hazard is a believer. It's not enough. What's the words? Faith without works is dead. I don't care what you believe in. If you're not working it, if you're not giving this thing away somehow, no matter where you're at, faith without works is dead. And that's what he tells Roland Hazard. And Roland seeks out the Oxford groups. He seeks out Frank Buckman. Ebby runs into Roland because he's court-ordered, right? Ebby's on his way to the asylum. And Roland rescues him from the judge, along with the judge's son and Seber Graves and Shep Cornell. They rescue Ebby, and in lieu of the insane asylum, in lieu of the hospital and shock treatments and maybe a lobotomy down the road, Ebby's court-ordered to Roland, and Roland takes him to the Oxford groups. And that's the message that Ebby's bringing to Bill Wilson. And the miracle tells you, seconds and inches, there are a difference between us being here and us not. You know, one of my favorite talks of Bill Wilson's on what slender threads our fellowship lies, our lives lie. You know, We Agnostics, I think, was probably one of the best spiritual chapters ever written in history. I mean, it was just written for all of us. You know, just giving us all a way to cross that bridge of reason to that shore of faith. Just be willing to believe. You know, they're asking the agnostic who's not sure, who has no knowledge of God, that maybe they can come to believe. They're asking the atheist to just lay aside everything they know for 1 second and just be willing to believe. You don't even have to say that you believe. Just be willing to believe. Take one step off of where you're at. Just take one step forward. Wherever you're standing, take one step off of that. That's the beginning. That's all you need. On that slender thread, a wonderful spiritual structure can be built. You know, to me, that's an absolute miracle here. You know, that anyone can get this. That Bill opened this gateway so large and so wide that anybody, the atheists, the agnostics, the believers, everybody can get clean here. Oh, I'm sorry, sober. Forget where I'm at sometimes. I had other issues. About $100 a pop. You guys read the spiritual appendix when we came in here. I'm going to read it again. A little differently, though. Yeah. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcohol has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Two things we learn in the very first paragraph. One is that a spiritual awakening / spiritual experience is nothing more than a personality change sufficient to recover from alcoholism. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes that were once the guiding force of these men and women replaced by a whole new set of ideas, attitudes, and emotions. Change in personality, change in the way we think, right? Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences change must be in a nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Change. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. Not true, right? In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, change, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, change, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, change, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experience are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference, change, long before he is himself. He finally realized that he has undergone a profound alteration, change, in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. We see that all the time. Anybody that sponsors a lot of people sees it constantly. And it comes in statements like this. And actually, we were riding home the other night, and I make the turn onto the street before my street, and it's dark there. There's no street lights right on that street. So I just have a habit of kicking my high beams on when I make that corner. Well, there was a kid walking the other way. As soon as I clicked my high beams on, the kid gave me the finger. Yeah. Guys, you know, I'm getting worked up just talking about it. You know what I mean? You guys with me, right? I get out of the truck. That's what I want to do. That's all what I did. Right? Normally, I get out of the truck and I get in this guy's face. Now, I don't even care if I get my ass kicked. It's a matter of manhood here, right? This guy just gave me the finger for no reason. I had this discussion while we were driving down the street. I said, you know what I would have normally done? And I would have been in a fight in the middle of the street with my wife sitting in a truck. That's who I am. Not today. And you know what I said? And that's not me. It's not me anymore. I have changed, right? How big a deal is this anyway? You know, I'm still pissed off, by the way, but I'm going to teach this little punk a lesson. But that being said, I showed restraint. And that's not me. No, it's not me. I have had a transformation, and I don't do that anymore. I let it go. How many times in traffic, you guys, anybody here, I want to tell this guy he's number one, man. You know, I want to get out. I want to roll a window. I want to confront this stupid ass. And we share about it, right? We share about it. I got up against this thing, and you know what? And I just let it go, and that's not me. No, it's not you. You've had a transformation. I hear it all the time with new guys, and you watch it happen. I sponsor a lot of guys in Halfway, and my sponsee, I've told this story 100 times. This guy comes up to me and says, I got a new guy in the house last night. I said, well, that's good. He says, yeah, he stole my food. I said, well, that's good, you know. And he said, no, you didn't hear what I said. New guy come in the house last night. He stole my food. I said, yeah, that's good. No, he says, you're not hearing me. You know, we got shelves in there. My food's in the middle shelf. You know, he took food off of the shelf. And I said, yeah, well, that's great, you know. And I know he walked away. When he walked away, he had to be shaking his head like, I got the wrong sponsor, man. This guy's, he's not even freaking listening to me, right? 3 weeks later, he comes back to me. He says, got a new guy in last night. I said, that's good. He says, yeah, I fed him. What the freak is the difference? Right? What's the difference? It's perception. It's perception is what's different. Same situation. We called it two different things. One takes me out of the sunlight of the Spirit. One puts me in the sunlight of the Spirit. And I say that about all the time. When you got rooms full of people, half of them don't want to be here. Half of them do. Half of them feel like they're blessed. Half of them thought they got screwed being here. I can't wait till this guy's done. This is bullshit. You know, this freaking cult that they got me coming to. You know, and then the other half's going, this is awesome. I'm loving it. I'm getting a lot out of this. And you're all sitting in the same place, listening to the same guy say the same thing. And it's perception. It's one thinks differently, that's all. It's change. This is all about changing our perception, right? Where was I? Oh, with few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience, change. Our more religious members call it God consciousness, change. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, change, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance and belligerent denial, not changing. That's the only way you're defeated here. If you stay in the same mindset that you're in, you will just continue to repeat the same behavior. Something has to change on the mind side. And emotionally, I'm not capable of that. But informationally, I got to know that I've got to take a step off of where I'm at. You know? There is a principle which is bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. And that principle is contempt prior to investigation. It's arrogance. Right? It's arrogance. I got this. I'm not surrendering to nothing. I can do this. And if you're the real alcoholic and you're a real addict, no, you can't. You know, and that's what differentiates us from the hard drinker or the social drinker. That's what differentiates us. Given sufficient reason, they stop or moderate. You know, I had a friend, Jimmy D. We got high and drank in Pittsburgh together for years. Right, I moved to South Florida. Found a higher powder when I got here. Shortly later, he moved on. And Jimmy and I ran together for a couple years. Right? And Jimmy and I were sitting in his biker bar in Margate, just south of Royal Palm Boulevard, in off of 441 right there, this little dive. And Jimmy got a call from his wife. And she said, if you don't come home right now and start being the husband that I married, I'm leaving. Jimmy went home. Unbelievable. Right? Right? Hard to believe, right? You know? Jimmy is still married. This is 30 years later. Jimmy's still married. He has four beautiful kids. And him and his wife are just having a great life. Right? I'm on my third, you know? Because nobody tells me what to do. Move off of where you're at, man. You know, if you're having a problem with the God thing, get over it. Get over it. Choose your own conception, God, spirit of the universe, creative intelligence, right? Mother Earth. You know, there's energy everywhere. I feel it everywhere. You know, the energy is here. God is here. You know, get off of that spot and move forward. Because the rest of this book, what this book is exactly about, is finding that power, is connecting you with that power and solving your problem. Thanks for letting me be here tonight.
Let's thank Pat one more time. Ryan with the secretary report.
Hi, I'm Ryan, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. And I've asked Andrew to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
I'm an alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime, but we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
'40s style big book sponsorship from forward to the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way, 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I see a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Awesome. And then is there anybody here that needs a sponsor? If you could raise your hand. Also, if you want to stand up. Awesome. Got a guy back here. So if you want to just talk to any of the people that just had their hand up before, we'll get you connected with God. Please join us Monday night, Big Book Study Meeting, where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30, and the Big Book Study starts at 7:15. And we also have CDs, mugs, large print Big Books, little red books, and Big Book dictionaries for sale. They're on the back table. And then we have announcements. Broward County Intergroup, there's office hours and ways to get in touch with them. You can get medallions, literature. I hear they're doing a BOGO on sponsors. We have volunteer opportunities, so if you're looking for a way to give back, there's plenty of opportunities in the area. AA's Got Talent is coming up in February, so break out your tap shoes, come up with a routine. And we got the gratitude dinner planning. The theme this year is the best is yet to come, and that's going to be on November 2nd. And then the 43rd annual Broward County Intergroup Picnic is on Sunday, November 4th. We are looking for volunteers for that as well. So if you're able to volunteer for that, you can see Fred in the back or Heather. They can get you connected. And 5th annual Gratitude Days, November 9th. It's a Friday, and it goes through Sunday, the 11th. And that's it. Also, just a reminder, there's a 75-foot no-smoking zone. So when you go out the doors, if you could just go down to the left, there's some buckets and stuff set up. You can throw your cigarette butts in those. They have the Boy Scouts next door, and they're trying to quit. So if you could just be courteous to that. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bell. See you next week.
If you'd like to thank Pat, just line up on the center aisle. Let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, can do is keep on praying.
for much accumulation. These possessions that I have amount to nothing at all.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine, let it shine.